Okay, well, if I have not had the pleasure of meeting you, I am Brooke. I am Pastor Peter and Pastor Christine's daughter, and it is my genuine privilege and honor to be speaking at what I hope is the first of many movie Sundays, because if you do know me, I hope there is one thing you do know, and that is my greatest passion in life is Jesus, and I love Jesus with everything in me, but I also love movies. And today, I feel like I am just in my happy place because we are spending a day celebrating Jesus by going to the movies. And it's just the best of the best Sundays for me. A few things you might know or you might not know about me. I was born in Melbourne in 1998. To save you doing the maths, I'm 24. But I actually have a rather supernatural birth story. Not to get too real, but it is a rather miracle, the story of my birth. And that is on February 4th, 1998, I was born in Melbourne. But somehow my vocal cords and my heart were born in Los Angeles. So I don't know how it happened, but a miracle occurred on the February 4th because vocal cords and a body were born in separate countries for the same person. My entire life, I have been asked the question, where are you from? And I go, Australia. And they look at me very strangely. Or I get, are you from America or Canada? And I smile and go, neither. Or recently I was asked, how long did you spend in the US? How long did you live there? Did you study there? And I realized that it is true. Actually, I did live in the States for a part of my life, if you didn't know that. I lived in the States for a total of 7 weeks over the course of two different family holidays in 2011 and 2013. But somehow during that, my vocal cords have attached themselves to the States, and I just am thinking it's a miracle. That's how I'm going to take it. But as I said, it was not just my vocal cords. It was also my heart, because I think my heart was born right in the middle of the Warner Brothers studio lot, because I just love movies. I adore movies. I adore storytelling, movie making. I love that movies can inspire us. Movies can challenge us. I don't know if you've ever actually been inspired by a movie. This is a true story. In 2018, a film was released with Tom Hanks called Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, and he was portraying Fred Rogers. And you know, that movie still to this day inspires and challenges me to be a better listener. Because of what I saw on screen of the way he listened in that movie, every day I'm reminded of that movie and I try to be a better listener. And I think this is how powerful movies can be. But I'm also aware that I think because of my great love for movies, God really genuinely uses movies to speak to me. And some of the greatest revelations of my life have come while watching a movie, and while I'm there watching a movie, God will speak to me, because I think he knows it's a way he can speak to me in a way where I will understand revelations, I will understand concepts is through movies. And so this is where we find ourselves on this beautiful movie Sunday, is I'm getting the privilege of sharing with you a journey God took me on earlier this year in regards to a movie, which led to researching a movie, which led to a revelation in God's word, which has completely changed my life. It has changed the way I pray. It has changed the way I treat people, the way I treat myself, the way I approach life every day. It has completely shaped my life. And it all started with watching a movie, researching a movie, and then a revelation. And so I would love you to sit back and munch on some popcorn. Prepare to journey, firstly, the film and the research of the film, where this revelation came from. Prepare to learn many, many movie facts, both because it's important to the revelation, also because I love movie facts. And then prepare to journey into the revelation, which has changed my life. And my prayer is that this revelation can change your life every day the way it's changed mine. So here we go. In 2015, the playwright Aaron Sorkin. Now, I don't know how many people here know who Aaron Sorkin is. Okay. thank you. Kindred spirits over here. Okay. Aaron Sorkin is arguably the best screenwriter. So he writes movies, and he's arguably the best of this generation. Okay. I mean, he has won Academy Awards, Golden Globes, BAFTAs, and many, many Emmy Awards, okay? He is the best of this generation, in my opinion. And in 2015, he was approached with the challenge to write a biopic, a biographical film, on the life of one of Hollywood's most iconic and successful and beloved stars. And he is given 90 minutes plus credits to tell this Hollywood icon's story. And so here we begin, where I would like to introduce you to the movie star of Movie Sunday. And that is Lucille Ball. Okay, I don't know how many people here know who Lucille Ball is. I don't know if you've heard of her, you've seen her work. If you do know her, prepare to know a lot more about her. If you don't know her, prepare to know her and to know a lot about her. If you're taking notes, feel free to write these facts down. Lucille Ball was born on August 6, 1911. Does anyone need to write that down? She was an American actress, comedian, and producer. Lucille Ball is praised as being one of the pioneers for women in Hollywood. Lucille Ball was nominated for 13 Primetime Emmy Awards and won 5 for her work. She was the recipient of several other accolades, such as a Golden Globe Award for outstanding contributions to the world of entertainment. And she received not one, but 2 stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. She has earned numerous honors, including the Women in Film Crystal Award and an induction into the Envision Hall of Fame. In 1986, she received a Kennedy Center honor for her contributions to the world of entertainment. And in 1989, she was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. So she's pretty successful. And keep in mind, Aaron Sorkin, he's about to write a 90-minute film, and this is what he's learning, like this and more. So he's gathering this for 90 minutes. He's got not 1 star, but 2 stars now for his 90 minutes. One article reads that proving that her talents extended beyond the realm of comedy, the entrepreneur became the first female studio head in Hollywood. As president of Desilu Productions, she broke the glass ceiling for women executives in the film and television industry, and her shows live on in syndication. So Desilu Productions is the production company that Lucille Ball started with her husband, Desi Arnaz. And without, you know, going too much detail, please understand that for 2 actors to start their own production company, this changed Hollywood, okay? This has completely changed the industry as we know it, because 2 actors took control by saying, we're starting our own production company. And, you know, just recently I heard an interview with an actress, and she said she is forever indebted to Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, because she said her career in, you know, 2022 as an actress is so different to actresses before Desilu Productions, because it has changed the way everything operates on a business side. So just keep that in mind. This has changed everything. And Desilu Productions, her company, it was rather successful. It was best known for these shows: I Love Lucy, The Lucy Show, Mannix, The Untouchables, Mission Impossible, and a small show which wasn't that successful, Star Trek. This was all thanks to Lucille Ball. So again, Aaron Sorkin, he's preparing his movie, and he now has all of Star Trek to put into his movie, because we only have Star Trek because of Lucille Ball. He also has the Mission Impossible movies, which are only happening because of the TV show that Lucille Ball created. But in 1962, Desilu was the second largest independent production company in the United States, behind MCA's Revue Studios. But then MCA bought Universal, and Desilu became and remained the number one independent production company until it was sold in 1968. When Ball sold her shares of Desilu to Gulf and Western, she sold it for $17 million. Now, that was valued at $138 million in 2021. And Gulf and Western then transformed Desilu into the television production arm of Paramount Pictures. So now, Aaron Sorkin has everything Paramount Pictures has ever done comes back to Lucille Ball. So his preparation for this movie is getting bigger and bigger. And you know, this is just a small portion of the achievements of Lucille Ball. Lucille Ball, though, is arguably best known for her role as Lucy Ricardo in the show her and her husband created, I Love Lucy, which changed the face of entertainment. Now, I don't know how many people here have watched or have heard of I Love Lucy, the TV show. My sister's hands straight up. This is a true story. When I was maybe 6 or 7, my parents, Pastor Pete and Pastor Christine, they said that myself and my older sister and my older brother, we could do something a bit crazy, and it must have been a Friday night or, school holidays, and they said, you get to stay up late, you can bring the sleeping bags into the family room, and you can just watch TV until you fall asleep. So for me, that's probably like 9:30. I'm going to stay up until I'm out watching TV, eating junk food. I mean, hello, adulthood. We watched I Love Lucy. We binge-watched I Love Lucy, and yes, it was our choice. We got to choose what we watched, and we loved it because I Love Lucy was a very special show for us. So I'll just keep that in mind. But if you do know the show, I would love to take you down memory lane and show you possibly the most iconic and beloved two-minute clip. And if you're not familiar with the show, hopefully this two-minute clip will make you laugh, but will also give you an understanding into the world of I Love Lucy.
Your last chance. If one piece of candy gets...
Hello, if you are wondering why I'm here, it is because this clip we're showing, while it is, we are allowed to show it in the service, we are not allowed to show it with copyright on live stream, unfortunately. So we stopped over here for a minute, and I'll just be with you for just 1 minute, 1 or 2 minutes while we watch it there, watching this clip. If you don't know it, it's the clip where Lucy and Ethel are making chocolates at the chocolate factory. It's a good episode. If you don't know, I grew up in the Lewis family, which means you grew up watching 70s sitcoms. I knew I Love Lucy, I knew the Brady Bunch, I knew the Partridge Family, I knew Hogan's Heroes. That was what I grew up on as a kid. But yeah, so I encourage you, so we've got about 2 minutes, so we'll be swapping back in just a couple minutes, but I just thought I'd come on here to explain what's going on. We're so sorry, we tried everything we could to try and find a way to show this clip legally with the copyright issues. But unfortunately, we couldn't. We've had a lot of trouble with Facebook in the last few months with copyright issues. That's why we've got the new music at the start of the service, why we have to have the new pre-service and all that stuff, just because we're not allowed to show any of that stuff. We've had a few weeks ago, Chris showed a picture of space on live stream and in the service, and the camera just caught it, a clip of it. And we got copyright banned for that whole service because technically that photo is on screen. So it's pretty strict at the moment. Facebook's really nailing down on it. So we realized we wouldn't be able to show this clip. So I'm here. You can imagine me in a pink apron and a pink cooking hat, cooking some chocolate biscuits if you want. If actually, the first half of it is her cooking the chocolate and trying to wrap it up, I should say, and put it in the boxes. The second half is her just stuffing her face with as much chocolate as she can. And that's probably easier for you to imagine me doing, because I will be doing that in the post-service. So why don't you go get ready. Afterwards, in the building here, we're going to be having a chocolate-themed morning tea. We've got some chocolates. So why don't you go to your cupboard quickly, try and find some chocolate. Find a pack of popcorn if you have. Bring it over to this couch. You have this 1 minute, get ready, enjoy your popcorn, enjoy Movie Sunday. I'm so enjoying it. Already I've had a great time. I'm getting very excited. We'll send you back to Brooke now.
I love Lucy, and that is why today's morning tea is a chocolate themed, because we are entering Lucy's chocolate factory for today. But just so you understand how significant, how successful this show was, that about a week ago, or 2 weeks ago, I was actually doing an online lecture with an acting coach in America, in LA, and he is like the best acting coach of today. He is the acting coach to the A-listers, like Will Smith, Chris Pine, Austin Butler, Gal Gadot, like those are the people he coaches. But he was doing this free online lecture for everyone called The Key to Comedy. So I went on, and he showed that 2 minute clip and spent an entire hour just speaking about that clip, because he says that basically Lucille Ball is still the benchmark for comedy. And this is someone who is literally, like, you know, teaching the A-listers. He goes back to Lucille Ball in that chocolate factory and says, if you can understand how she approached comedy, he said, you'll be successful. And so Lucille Ball once said, you know, you cannot teach someone comedy. Either they have it or they don't. Well, she had it, and that is why she's still recognized as being the queen of comedy. But do you know, I Love Lucy also pioneered technical aspects of a comedy show using 3 cameras, a set, and a live audience. Now, maybe that statement doesn't mean a lot to you, but just understand that the way they ran their show with the 3 cameras, a live audience, and the set, it has, again, changed the entertainment industry. And so many shows now go back to recreating how I Love Lucy actually filmed. So again, something else that Aaron Sorkin now to include is the technical aspects of this show. You ask, oh, was I Love Lucy very successful? Well, the show I Love Lucy averaged 60 million viewers every night. 60 million viewers every night tuned in to watch I Love Lucy. Now, in perspective, that is 600 packed MCGs. So imagine 600 MCGs, and that is how many people every night would sit and watch I Love Lucy. They say that shops used to be open late on Monday nights, but they switched to Thursday nights. Why? Because everyone was at home watching I Love Lucy. The show was so successful that the shopping centres actually switched their hours because they realised no one was shopping when I Love Lucy was on. I mean, can you imagine if Chadston changed their hours because there's a show that's so successful? That is how powerful and influential I Love Lucy was. So we go back to Aaron Sorkin, and he's presented with this life, this career of Lucille Ball. And the question is asked, how do you convey all this woman achieved in just 90 minutes? How do you do it? How do you take everything she has achieved and convey it in just 90 minutes? The answer, he didn't. In fact, he didn't even try. And this is where the revelation for my life began. In 2021, the film Being the Ricardos was released with Nicole Kidman, Australia's Nicole Kidman, portraying the queen of comedy, Lucille Ball. Now, I would just love to put a quick disclaimer out. Earlier this year, I had the opportunity to watch a filtered version of this film, meaning, you know, when you go on an airplane and they will show you a version of the movie, but they'll remove any language, scenes, references that would stop it being G or PG. Well, through a Christian company called VidAngel, I was able to see effectively the plain version of Being the Ricardos. So I would just leave that as a disclaimer. But Being the Ricardos is not a movie which showcases the achievements of Lucille Ball. Instead, it is a movie which showcases who Lucille Ball was. I'll say that again. Being the Ricardos is not a movie which showcases the achievements of Lucille Ball, but instead a movie which showcases who Lucille Ball was. And, you know, you may ask, is that not the same thing? Well, according to Aaron Sorkin, who wrote the film, no. No, they are not. To quote Aaron Sorkin, I focus on the characters' intentions and obstacles and what tactics they use to overcome those obstacles. Or another quote from the playwright is, the characters are defined by the way they overcome the obstacles that are thrown in their way. Now, you might be saying, what does all that mean? Okay, well, it's some drama lingo to help you understand the phrase from where Aaron Sorkin is saying it. Okay, the character, that's the person the story is about. Intentions, that's the drama lingo for any, like, their desires, their needs, the wants of the character. The obstacles are the bad things, the challenges which come up, which will stop them from achieving their intention. Tactics is, that's just English, tactics. So what does all this mean? Well, to put it in the context of Lucille Ball, the quotes would read as this. I focus on Lucille Ball's intentions, her desires, and her obstacles, okay, the challenges, and what tactics she uses to overcome those obstacles. Lucille Ball is defined by the way she overcomes the obstacles that are thrown in her way. Lucille Ball is defined by the way she overcomes the obstacles that are thrown in her way. Now you can say, wait a minute, shouldn't his quote be, Lucille Ball is defined by how many awards are on her shelf. Lucille Ball is defined by how much money she earned per year, by how many dreams from her vision board were fulfilled, or how many followers she had on TikTok. No. See, Aaron Sorkin's belief is Lucille Ball is defined by the way she overcame the obstacles that were thrown in her way. So to show the audience who Lucille Ball was, not what she did, but who Lucille Ball was, Aaron Sorkin chose to write a film which restricted Lucille Ball's entire life. He took her entire life and restricted it to 1 week. 1 week on one soundstage, and not just any week, but a week of crisis. The film begins on a Monday morning table read, and it finishes on the Friday night taping of a show. That's the entire movie. And it's season one, Fred and Ethel fight. Table read to filming. The film opens with Lucille Ball being accused by the media of being a communist, an accusation which could cause her to lose her career. She also faces a crisis in her marriage and a crisis on the I Love Lucy show due to being pregnant and the fact that in the 1950s you would never have a pregnant woman on TV. So how amazing is this? Aaron Sorkin is presented with Lucille Ball's entire life, every achievement, every accolade, everything she, you know, she did, and writes her entire biographical film based on how she overcame a week of crisis. Because Aaron Sorkin believed that the audience learned more about who Lucille Ball actually was by how she overcame a crisis than by showing us a montage of her achievements. And do you know something I find incredibly interesting is that, as I said, it starts with a table read of an episode and finishes taping the episode. It was a rather forgettable episode that the entire movie is based around. Like, if you know the show, if you said to me that he was going to base an entire movie around filming one episode, I would have thought he would have, you know, chosen one of the most popular episodes. Episodes like Job Switching, Lucy Becomes a Sculptress, The Handcuffs, Lucy Raises Chickens, Lucy's Italian Movie. Okay, for those of you who know the show, these are some of the most iconic episodes. But instead, he chose an episode which was kind of forgettable. And, you know, I sort of go, why did you do that? Why do you base the whole thing around an episode the audience probably doesn't even remember? And after listening to many, many, many interviews with Aaron Sorkin, there is one thing I can guarantee. It was not just because he chose an episode out of a hat. Everything Aaron Sorkin puts in and leaves out of a script is very, very intentional. And even though maybe I don't personally know why he chose that exact episode, the thing that has challenged me is that the knowledge that sometimes the most forgettable moments of your life are the ones people use to define you. That it was a forgettable episode which Aaron Sorkin chose to define Lucille Ball's life. You know, I think Aaron Sorkin purposely chose to show how Lucille Ball approached a mediocre episode. How did she improve the comedy? She is the queen of comedy. So how did she improve comedy when it was not that good? How did she treat the writers when she didn't think their writing was very good? That's a huge part of the film, is how did she actually treat the people, especially the writers, when she thought this episode isn't as good as it could be? How did she work a normal week? And, you know, this leads me into the challenge that God gave me and the revelation that began to burst in my heart. And I want to now give you this challenge. Imagine, if you will, that Mr. Aaron Sorkin, the best screenwriter of this generation, he walks into the church behind you. And he walks in and walks up to you and says, I want to write a film based on your life. My next project, I want it to be your life, your story. I want to write a film based on your life. And I'm going to get someone like Nicole Kidman to play you. I'm going to get one of the best... Our pastor goes, he's like, I don't want Nicole Kidman to play me. He says, you can choose the A-lister you want, because I can tell you that being the Ricardos, this was not a... They didn't have to go find people to do this. When Aaron Sorkin wrote a script, it was literally like, you know, like everyone wanted the roles because they knew how successful it would be. So imagine he comes and says, my next project is going to be your life. You get to choose who's going to star as you. You get to help us with the costumes. You get to do all the fun things. How would you respond? You know, at first you could be, oh, that's so exciting. My life's about to change. This will be amazing. But how would you respond now knowing how Aaron Sorkin defines a life? Remember, he was given Lucille Ball's entire life, all of her achievements, all of her accolades, and he restricted it to 1 week for his screenplay. And it wasn't a special week. It was a week of crisis. It wasn't even a special episode of I Love Lucy. It was a forgettable episode. You know, maybe he'll choose a forgettable week of your work and say, how you work in that week, that's how I'm going to define you. Or maybe he'll say, you know, that week when there was a crisis, how did you live? How did you treat your family? How did you treat your friends? That's how we're going to define you. It wasn't, you know, imagine, if you will, that this coming week, this coming 7 days is the week he says, I'm going to write about that week. And maybe you look and say, it's not a special week. Well, it wasn't a special week for Lucia Ball in terms of she wasn't receiving an honor. She wasn't filming one of the most popular episodes of I Love Lucy. In her business side, it was a pretty forgettable week. But it was also a week of personal crisis when she was at, you know, could lose everything. That's when he said, how you live in that little pocket of time, that's how I will define you. You know, to quote Aaron Sorkin again, I focus on the character's intentions and obstacles and what tactics they use to overcome those obstacles. The characters are defined by the way they overcome the obstacles that are thrown in their way. And, you know, I know watching the film, seeing that Lucille Ball, I didn't know Lucille Ball was ever accused of being a communist. That was news to me. But I can tell you that he didn't do that because he wanted the audience to say, did you know Lucille Ball was labeled a communist? It wasn't because he wanted the audience to know she was once labeled a communist and, you know, was able to restore her reputation and her career. No, he chose that crisis saying how she responded to that crisis, how she overcame that crisis. That's what I want you to see. Not what she did. It could have been a different crisis. He could have chosen many things she went through. But he wanted us to see how she overcame, how she treated her co-stars when her career was falling apart. How did she hold herself in the business dealings when her career was at stake? By how she overcame. Not just that she overcame, but how she journeyed to overcoming. That's how Aaron Sorkin defined her life. You know, I have a question. I would love to see a show of hands, and I would love to say at the start that my hand is 100% up for this. I would put both hands up, in fact. How many people have gone into the other side of a challenge, meaning you've been facing a challenge, a crisis, and you see God's faithfulness, you see God's power, you see a miracle, and you're now standing in the miracle. You're on the other side. How many people look back and wish they could go and change how they journeyed? How many people wish they could go back and be more peaceful while you were waiting for the miracle? How many people wish you could go back and be more patient? You could be less snappy to those around you. You could be more generous. I know from my life, there's so many things I wish I could go back, because sometimes when you're actually in the week of crisis, all you see is the crisis. All you see is the challenge. But then when you do see God's faithfulness, and God is always faithful, when you do see it, you look back and realize there was a better way to journey that. There was a better way to journey to the miracle. And, you know, as I began to ponder this thought, this revelation about how it's actually how I overcome things that defines me, not what I do, but how I live each week, how I live a forgettable week, how I live a week of crisis that actually defines who I am. As I began to think about this, and I spent time praying and talking to God about this concept of, hey, you know, is that really how I should be looking at life, not by what I do, but actually just how I live and how I actually approach life? And God led me back to a story in the Bible. And in 2019, God led me in a life-changing study on the life of King David. So I'd love to introduce you to today's sermon is I Love David. So we can say goodbye to Lucy, because the sermon is actually I Love David. Because, you know, David was a shepherd boy who had a dream to be the king. Now, I don't know about you, but do you realize that being a king is pretty impossible? That when you think about it, a king is not a resume. You don't get your resume and say, I'd like to apply to be the next king of England. It's saying, no, you were born into it. That's saying you were born into it, and that's that. But David had this impossible dream. And I spent probably 6 months in 2019 studying the life of David from the moment he was given the promise, the dream of being king, to the moment he did sit on the throne. And I learned so much. You know, the things that really stood out to me is that David was faithful in the field when he was called to the palace. I mean, I feel like that could be an entire sermon. You are faithful in the field, even though you know you're actually called to the palace. Another thing is that David served Saul in Saul's kingdom, even though Saul actually blocked his dream. Like, Saul was the current king, and so in order for David to ever be king, Saul had to be removed. But instead of spending his time trying to remove Saul, David actually served Saul. And you know, David praised and David worshipped his way to the throne, and then God did the impossible, and God did make him king. You know, I'd love it if they could they put the scripture up for today in Acts. And this is the scripture that I would love us to have as today's scripture. In Acts 13:22, it says, "But God removed Saul and replaced him with David, a man about whom God said, 'I found David, son of Jesse, a man after my own heart. He will do everything I want him to do.'" A man after God's own heart. That's how God defined David's life. You know, do you notice that God got to define David's life, and he doesn't say a king who slayed giants, a king who brought prosperity, a king who played the harp really well. You know, do you notice that it doesn't even say a king after God's own heart? Because being king is what he did, but it was not who he was. You know, do you also notice that when I was studying the life of David, is that David was not perfect. You know, David messed up. And do you notice that God did not define David by saying a man who had an affair with a woman and then arranged for the husband to be killed? Because David did that. The Bible tells us that David messed up. He had an affair and then arranged for the husband to be killed to cover it up. But God did not define him by his mistake. Because when David repented and David went back to God, God said, "Okay, my grace will cover it. We can still define you how you decide to be defined." And you know, I've already asked you the question, which was the first question God gave me, is how would Aaron Sorkin define your life if he were to ever make a movie? You know, I spent a lot of time thinking about that and that concept and that revelation about, okay, if Aaron Sorkin was defining my life, how would I want it to define me? But then God gave me a far better question, and this is the question I'd love to leave you with. How does God define your life? Because, you know, you realize there's a pretty good chance Aaron Sorkin will never define your life. It's very unlikely that Aaron Sorkin will come in and his next, how many people are in here? That just imagine if every one of us was he was going to make a movie of. I don't think it's going to happen. Even just logistically, I don't think he would have time. It took him like 6 years to do Lucille Ball. So if we said roughly 5 years for each of us, it's not possible for him to actually do it, to define each of us in a movie. But God will define us. This isn't a hypothetical. God will define our life. And you know, as I was preparing, the phrase that God gave me, he said, "Achievements should be celebrated. Fulfilling your dreams should be very much celebrated, but they don't define us." Because, you know, why did God define David as a man after God's own heart? It was because of how David lived in every season. From shepherd to king, how he lived was how God defined him. God didn't have to say, "Okay, well, I will define you by this season." It was how David lived week after week, season after season, trial after trial. How he lived meant God could define him as a man after God's own heart. You know, to somewhat paraphrase Aaron Sorkin, you are defined by the tactics you use and the way you overcome obstacles that are thrown in your way by the devil, by others, and by life. And, you know, I remember thinking, God, how do I do that? How do I take this concept of being defined the way I want to be? And I was having a conversation with my dad, Pastor Peter, and we're actually talking about the life of Jesus. And he said, "Brooke, you know, when you read a story in the Bible about Jesus," he said, "hold it up like this." And he said, "just hold that story up. Just narrow in on that story and study it and study it and study it and learn everything you can about Jesus from that story." He said, "but then take a step back and see that story as like a piece of a mosaic painting." And he said, "the entire life of Jesus everything from his birth to dying on the cross to being raised again. He said, see that piece as one piece of the whole picture. And I thought, okay, well, what if our lives were the same? You know, what if this coming week was one piece of my mosaic painting? Okay, so how will I treat my family this week? How, even if it's a week of crisis, how will I treat my family this week? How will I hold myself at work this week? I'm just going to focus in on this week. How generous will I be this week? How will I pray? And will I only pray for myself, or will I be praying for others this week? And when you focus on this week, and then next week you focus on this week, and then next week you focus on the next week, the big picture will take care of itself. And you know, when I was talking with my dad last night, he gave me a great phrase. He said, a week of making small decisions, when you add it to all the other weeks, that's what defines us. You know, a week of making small decisions, and you realize that there will be some weeks where it won't be a small decision. Some weeks will have pivotal decisions. Some weeks will have a crisis like no other. Some week will have a dream being fulfilled. Some weeks will be more significant. But if you just say, I do recognize, though, every decision in every week, that's how, all added up, that's how the painting of my life happens. And in, you know, 2011, the Christian songwriter Chris Tomlin, he was similar to Aaron Sorkin. He was given a challenge of taking the life of King David and defining it and summing it up. You know, Aaron Sorkin had 90 minutes for the life of Lucille Ball, but Chris Tomlin had 3 minutes. 3 minutes for King David. And as the band just begins to play the first verse and the chorus, I'd love you to start to hear the start of how Chris Tomlin chose to define King David. End of the day, I want to hear people say, my heart looks like your heart. Chris Tomlin looked at the life of David, all of his achievements, all of his mistakes, all of his prayers, all of his praise, and he concluded that this was David's prayer. It wasn't, let people say I'm the greatest king Israel has ever seen. Don't let people say I'm the richest king. Don't let people say my songs will go down in history or I killed Goliath. He concluded after studying the life of David that David wanted to be defined not by what he did, but how he lived every day, and that was his heart looked like God's. You know, imagine if being the Ricardos began with Lucille Ball being falsely accused by the media of being a communist. But then imagine if the next scene was you find her on her knees crying out to God with the words, at the end of this media crisis, I just want to hear people say, my heart looks like your heart. Imagine if she could have been so confident that God would vindicate her innocence and would restore her career, that her heart's cry was that people would see Jesus by the way she overcame the challenge. You know, I've had the genuine honor and privilege of walking a journey with a very, very dear friend. And my friend is going through a crisis, which is Aaron Sorkin biopic worthy. Like, this is no small thing. I've never seen anything like it in my life, what my friend is going through. And do you know what I love and what inspires me and encourages me and challenges me? Is that my friend is so confident in God's faithfulness and is so confident in that God will perform a miracle, that my friend is focused on how they journey to the miracle. Rather than spending their time worrying about a miracle, they are confident that God has a miracle, and so they are focusing on letting people see Jesus by the way they walk the journey to their miracle. They are purposely worshiping to their miracle. They are praising to their miracle. They are being generous on purpose. And they've said this to me. They've said, I'm going to be generous while I'm walking to my miracle. And they said, I'm not going to be inward focused. I'm constantly going to look out and see who can I pray for, who can I help while I'm walking this journey. You know, what if we all approached life like this? What if we were so confident in God's faithfulness and so confident that God has our future in His hands that we say we want people to see Jesus by the way we walk this journey? What if we were so confident that our prayers were, Jesus, let people see you by the way I overcome challenges? You know, again, to quote Aaron Sorkin, the characters are defined by the way they overcome the obstacles that are thrown in their way. You know, for me, my prayer is at the end of the day, I want to hear people say, the way Brooke overcame obstacles looked like Jesus. This is the revelation that God has given me, is that at the end of the day, I want to hear people say, the way I overcome every obstacle, big and small, looks like Jesus. And you know, when I was preparing this message and I was praying, God really put four people or four different responses on my heart. And as I read them out, if you feel like you can relate to any of those, I'd love to invite you. Firstly, you're welcome. We are opening up this altar. You're welcome to come forward, and our pastors and our team, we would love to pray with you. Or if you prefer to stay in your seat and just reflect, that's entirely up to you. If you're joining us online, we invite you, put something in the comments so we can connect and we can pray with you. But here are the four. Maybe you can relate to how Lucille Ball feels in the opening moments of being the Ricardos. You feel like life is falling apart around you. You have just been sideswiped and you are facing something impossible. Maybe it's an impossible challenge, or maybe it's an impossible dream. You know, as far as Aaron Sorkin's script portrayed, Lucille Ball had to overcome every challenge in that movie in her own strength. The movie never depicted her going to God. But we don't have to. We do not have to overcome our obstacles and our strength. We can go to God. We have supernatural help. We can overcome every obstacle with supernatural help. You know, I know there are reports that say actually later in life, Lucille Ball did have a relationship with God. But I wonder how differently her life, not even just speaking about the movie, but actually her life when she did go through these crises, how differently would have it been if she didn't have to do it in her own strength, but she could have actually said, I'm on my knees, God, help me overcome this. Now, the second response was, maybe you don't have 2 stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame like Lucille Ball. Maybe you don't have a trophy cabinet full of the highest accolades. And maybe you feel unseen and like your life doesn't matter enough to actually be defined. Well, I'm here to say that is so wrong. As we've said, Aaron Sorkin defined Lucille Ball's life because of her accolades, that it was because of her success and her career that audiences around the world were interested in seeing her life defined. But God will define every person. God is defining every person. God will write your story. Remember, God defined David It was not because of what David did, but how David did everything. God was defining David when he was a shepherd boy. God was defining David when he was king. And you know, other people in your life will write your story. Other people are defining your story. Your coworkers are defining you. How do you want your coworkers to define you? Do you want them to say they are the best salesperson we have? Or do you want them to say they just remind me of Jesus? Do you want your kids to say, my parents, they're busy and they just juggle so many responsibilities? Or do you want to say, my parents, they just look like Jesus to me? Do you want your friends, your life group, to say, my friend's just really funny and happy? Or do you want them to say, my friend has such a joy and such a Jesus about them in everything they do? How do you want people to define your life? The third response was maybe, like David with the affair with Bathsheba, you think your life will forever be defined by your worst mistakes. But it doesn't have to be. You know, you can still be defined as a man or woman after God's own heart. Your heart can still look like God's. David messed up big time, but David repented and God forgave him. And God's grace wiped it clean and said, okay, let's redefine you. And I'm here to say that today can be a redefining day for you. And the fourth response that God gave me was maybe the concept of at the end of the day is scary. Maybe saying at the end of my life, this is how I want to be defined. Some people go, I don't even want to think about being defined. I just don't want to think about the end of my life because the end of my life is scary. Or you're saying, I don't even want to think about how I journey to the end of this crisis because the end of this crisis is scary because what if I lose? What if I do lose it all? What if I lose my health, my career, my family? You could say, maybe I don't want to think about the end of a dream because maybe that's actually just utter disappointment. You know, when I was preparing this and in my own life, in my own journals, when I'm thinking about how I want to be defined at the end, I have such peace when I look at the end of my life, the end of every crisis, the end of every dream, because I know at the end is Jesus. At the end of my life is Jesus, and so therefore I have peace, and I can just look about how do I want to be defined leading up to it. I know at the end of every challenge, and we are all going through different challenges. There is no one here joining us or in this room that's not going through something. But I can look at the end of my challenge and go, I have peace because I know Jesus is at the end, and therefore I have victory at the end. And so I'm just going to focus on how I journey. I can look at the end of every dream and go, no, I know I have a way maker standing at the end of my dream, so I'm just going to focus on how I journey there. You know, without Jesus at the end, you can't have that peace. And you can't have Jesus at the end if you don't have Jesus today at the start. And if you would like to start today with Jesus so you know at the end is Jesus, again, just like the others, if any of those you can relate to, firstly, if you'd like to come out the front, or even if you don't relate, but you'd just like to come out the front and maybe just worship as the band continues to play this entire song, or maybe you prefer to stay in your seats and just reflect. It's entirely up to you. But I would love us to just use this time as the band continues to play to stop and reflect and hear God. How does God want your life defined? And how do you want your life defined? So I invite you to stand. As we said, the altar is open. Please use the comments if you're joining us online. Let's just reflect as the band continues to play.